Good afternoon, Wrangell. You're listening to Talk on the Rock, your local live call-in show. The time is 1 p.m. We have our guest, Tis Peterman, in the studio. We're going to talk about transboundary mining and what advocates are doing in Alaska and in Canada to protect Alaska waters. So call in anytime during this program to just say hi or to ask a question. That number is 874-2345. Tis, thank you for coming in today.
You're welcome.
Absolutely. So just kind of lay out, what are the concerns around mining, transboundary mining, and maybe any sort of kind of resource development around the state that you're really focusing in on?
Well, I'm the coordinator for the Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission, which was a group of 15 federally recognized tribes. And each tribe in Southeast, or out of the 15 that are our members, they vote by resolution or by letter to name a rep that sits on this commission. And we've been focused on transboundary mining on the Stikine, the Yunik, and the Taku.
Absolutely. And what are some of, you know, why should we be concerned about this? What has happened in the past that lets us know we need to be more active?
Well, the Red Chris mine, which is up on the Ascoot, which flows into the Stikine, is an active mine. It has what they call a tailings pond. In your mind, you think pond. Oh, there's birds flying around. But really, it's a lake of poison is what we like to call it. The tailings are the leftovers of the mining ore. And they are submerged behind an earthen dam. This is on the Red Chris. That's 35 stories high.
With so, an earthen dam. Yeah.
Yes. And it's being run by Imperial Metals, which is the same company that built the same type of dam out Mount Polly that blew about, let's see, 4 years ago and devastated that area.
Yeah. And what do you mean by devastation? Like, what does that look like?
It looks like a moonscape.
Uh-huh.
And I know a gal down there from the First Nations Women for Responsible Mining. Her name's Jacinda Mack. She's in Washington, D.C. as we speak, talking to our legislators about transboundary mining and the threats, because she comes from that area. And I actually heard her speak on a panel this past weekend in B.C., and it was very emotional. She broke down sobbing because nothing's been done. It hasn't been cleaned up. The tailings pond breached and ended up in a lake below that, and all the tailings are going to the bottom of that lake. So people that had, they had lodges, you know, sport fishing, all of that is gone, completely gone.
Yeah, you're saying, yeah, it's definitely, it's affecting the fishing, and that's commercial fishing, sport fishing. What other impacts?
It'd be subsistence hunting.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in the middle of the moose hunt right now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, one person went and stated, if that breaches up there, we're going to be a dead zone down here.
We're going to be a dead zone.
Yes. Yeah. So our group is reaching out to the First Nations because we can. We're federally recognized tribes. And First Nations don't have that yet, but they're working on it. So we developed something called our unity statement with First Nations last March and Southeast Alaska tribes, Bristol Bay, and the Yukon watershed. And so we developed this unity statement that said we'd work together. It was sort of interesting to go to that one because the first question that they said, well, how can we trust you if you have a president that says America first? That was the first question of the meeting.
Wow, yeah.
And then it was interesting to us that their government was telling us that our group existed, but we didn't really care about the transboundary mining. So it was interesting to sit across from the table and develop a unity statement and reach out to our traditional, you know, we traded traditionally with them.
But they gave you some resistance.
It was just a little uncomfortable at first, but we worked through it. And so that's our next job, is to reach out to more First Nations to sign off on that unity agreement.
Yeah. I'm very interested, you know, when it comes to this matter of who's leading the effort? You know, Dan Sullivan and Byron Mallott, you know, have came out and said, we want to work on this, but I'm wondering, are they really the people that are working on it? Who is leading this effort to make something happen?
Well, that's one of the reasons we formed a group, was because we could reach out across the border. There mm-hmm. was nobody else that can actually do that. They'd have to go through, you know, the regular political channels. And so there's the environmentalists are working on it. Lieutenant Governor and Sullivan go to Ottawa. But I've been told what they say when Dan Sullivan was here. He says, oh, we've been doing great things. What those great things are have never been named.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So meanwhile, there's another mine up there on the Galore Creek. And there's, I think, 5 more that are in the permit process.
Okay.
If you actually looked at a map and brought it up on proposed mines on the transboundary, mm-hmm. on the Canadian side, there's a map of red dots.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not the only one on the Stikine that are facing it. There's a KSM mine and the Bruce Jack down on the Unik.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been told that when those two have they're combined miners and the people that are running the mines, they will combine and that will be a small city to service those two. So that brings up another issue of... they call them man camps, and it's the people that service the mines. Well, what happens is in the remote villages, there are vulnerable people, women and children, that are affected by what happens in these man camps. So that's a whole nother issue.
Yeah. So you're saying that, you know, I think obviously like fishing is probably top of our mind when we think about these issues, but it has a total emotional impact on a community.
Not only first responders, medical, you know, they have this whole group of people that they now have to service, whether it's infrastructure or, you know, just providing food for them. So it's, that was interesting. We went to Kamloops, BC this past weekend for a network conference, and that was one of the panels, was how people, this is how they work. The corporations come in and do their own assessment on the impacts to a community. And then they say they're following, you know, the assessment and recommendations, but the corporation has set up the assessment. So it's not the community doing it itself.
Absolutely. I guess in their mind, do they feel like they're giving back to that community in some way? Do they hire people from those communities? You're saying they bring in these camps. It's like you're not even providing jobs for those people or...
Not really.
Yeah.
Because they bring in a lot. But, I was reading, we had a man from Brazil presenting at the same panel, and they had that big breach down there. It was the largest in mining history in 2015, and that place is still devastated as well. And what they did down there was they actually fueled the politics for that area. The corporations did, the oil companies or the mining companies. And so they would put in people that knew they wouldn't regulate as much as just a guy running for office in the United States.
Absolutely.
And then they turned around and acted as if they were very land and water conscious, when in fact they weren't.
Yeah.
So that's what's...
could easily see that happening here, too.
Oh, yes. When I first started in 2014, I was the rep for Wrangell WCA on this group. And we met with some mining executives over in Klawak, and the owner, or he was the CEO, brought in his four lawyers. And so when we were having questions about mining and on the eunuch, he would never answer a question. I always went to one of the lawyers. And so we both sides knew that we weren't getting anywhere, and they abruptly got up and left.
Wow.
But we were told at that meeting that the mining corporations will find out what you need in your community, and if they want the community support, they would offer to build something that you need or fund something that the community needs.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is one thing that we found out in BC, that a tribe turned down $1 billion. They're poor, but they said no.
Wow.
Because they wanted their support for the pipeline that's going into Vancouver.
Wow.
So
$1 billion for one tribe, for one poor tribe. Yeah.
So, you know, that's the change I have been seeing, is that not only are the First Nations getting more power on fighting this issue, they actually are turning down funding from the corporations.
Absolutely. That's interesting.
So that's the change I've seen in about 5 years. And it's been interesting because Canada passed a United Nations Declaration on Indigenous Peoples' Rights.
Okay.
And it's supposed to guarantee that traditional people give free, prior, informed consent on anything that is built on their traditional lands.
They must give that for anything to be built there.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that is United States didn't pass it, but Canada did. So you're seeing a lot of visible tribal and First Nations action on traditional lands.
Yeah. I mean, when you say that, I'm almost thinking, gosh, it hasn't been like that. Like, we're just now doing that. Shouldn't that have always been the way? Like, this is their land and they say what goes. But you're saying, no, people can come in. People have maneuvered their ways to have access to those lands anyway.
Yes.
Well, yeah, exactly.
So it's just been a concern because the regulations on any of the mining on the BC side is lower standards than on the Alaskan side.
Okay.
So according to the 1909 treaty that Canada and Alaska signed, neither side is supposed to pollute any of the waters that are going transboundary.
Okay. So there's that treaty.
Yes, but the state, in order to get the commission to meet, the International Justice Commission to meet on this issue, you have to have both sides of the commission agree to meet on it. Mm-hmm. And they haven't done that yet. We've been pushing the State Department, our group has, that they meet. But really, that's not going to solve the problem. The problem is the regulations are lax.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. Tis, let's go to a break and come back. I love our discussion so far, and I've got plenty of questions. And if you're listening now, this is Talk on the Rock. We have our guest, Tis Peterman, in the studio talking about transboundary mining issues. Go ahead and give us a call if you have a question. You know, Tis knows a lot, and this would be a good time to kind of pick her brain about what's going on out there. So that number is 874-2345. All right, we are back. The time is 1:16, and we have our guest, Tis Peterman, in the studio. So we're talking about transboundary mining issues and how they can, you know, impact our environment, our Alaska waters. So go ahead, Tis, tell me, you know, what is it that advocates want to see?
Well, not only the meeting of the IGC, but those wheels turn too slow. Meanwhile, there's mining still going on as we speak. I would personally like to say I'd like to see these mines shut down, but you know that won't happen. I mean, gold and copper and everything else that we need for our cell phones and all our electronics depend on that. But there was one success story that I listened to in Kamloops this past weekend, and it was about a woman. She was pretty well single-handedly fighting a mining company going into their traditional lands and using that free prior informed consent that they had to talk to the tribe and get their permission to go in there and start that mining core, or, you know, that mining place. She worked for over a decade, and she thought she would be grooming her daughter because she thought she'd never see it happen in her lifetime, that she could stop this mining company from going in on their traditional lands. And she did. She stopped it.
Right on.
And it was so overwhelming for her. She's another one that broke down, but that was one of the success stories that came out.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it seems like these stories that we're hearing about, you know, our successes are not... They're not from the State Department stepping in and saying, we're going to have stricter regulations, stricter permitting. You're saying it's people standing up for their land that they have rights over. Yeah.
I mean, all of us do.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about it as our way of life, but if when you look at everybody that lives at the mouth of this river, that's their way of life. And that's what it's going to take. It's people to stand up and... advocate for clean water.
Absolutely.
That's the only, you know, that's our way of life. And I know I talk about this quite a bit to different ones, but a lot of people don't want to hear about it. There's a lot of nasty stuff going on in the world. And, you know, on one side you see on Facebook all happy, you know, little hearts and everything else. And then you see the nastiness of the politics and everything else. Who wants one more thing on their plate? But for me, I started out just as a rep from the tribe, and the more I learned about it, the more involved I got. And then after I was no longer the rep for a while, when Aaron was actually running the tribe, and he was the rep, and then he has now moved on, it came back to me. It came back to me, and I firmly believe if something comes back in front of my plate time and time again, then it's meant to be, I guess. So I got hired about 14 months ago for this group as a coordinator. And the more you get into it, the more overwhelming it is. But I feel like it's, you know, somebody's got to do it.
Absolutely.
It was like a gentleman from Cake when we were at the meeting with the First Nations last March. He was wrapping up our two-day conference, and he goes, if not us, who? And so that brought one of our funders to tears because, you know, that wrapped it up in a sentence. If not us, who?
Yeah.
And if you aren't going to do this for your grandchildren, you know, how are you going to explain to them?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You sat back and did nothing.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So that's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Think about your generations, yeah, down the line. Yeah, and that's a big, you know, that always makes me think more of kind of Native culture, kind of, I think they're more geared towards that than the rest of us. We sort of weren't taught that as much. The seventh generation or, you know,
right.
Yeah. That's a good way to think about it.
But it was like one of our elders said, and one of... interviews that somebody did. I just read about it again. It crossed my path. He said it a couple of years ago. If you ruin the river, it's gone for good. So that's, it's pretty emotional and pretty overwhelming, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all this that you're doing is very, it's like it's the what if, but you're, and everybody can kind of turn a blind eye and say it's not happening now, and what if, well, what's the possibility that it would happen? And you're saying, well, if there's any possibility, it's worth doing, it's worth preventing.
I had one guy tell me when I was talking to him about, you know, reaching out to the First Nations and trying to get this coalition aligned on both sides of the border, he said, well, there's nothing we can do about it. And I just looked at him and I thought, you're supposed to be a leader in this community and you have that attitude. I didn't like it at all, but that's my personal opinion. But we're still working at it. We're up next. We have our representative annual meeting in Juneau this weekend. So it's just going to be one more big push, getting all of our representatives to become active and reaching out to the First Nations and getting more people to sign on this unity statement. I was asked by a gentleman from up by Ambler Road, putting in a road up there, and really it's part of the Yukon watershed. So he was asking for help from our group to support their efforts. So I think they'll be coming signing on soon too. There's a bunch of villages up there. So it's everywhere, it just feels like.
Yeah.
In my world.
Definitely, yeah. And how optimistic are you?
I don't know. I think seeing the success story that I saw last weekend sort of gave me some hope that if we can actually all stand together and say, hey, this is our traditional lands and let's all, you know, come out fighting. That's the only way you're going to get any recognition. I don't know how successful that'll be, but it's better than doing nothing.
Absolutely. Perfect. You know what? I've got one more question for you before we leave. And our conversation is kind of informing me now that maybe this isn't my favorite question on this. But yeah, everybody is going to be voting on this Stand for Salmon ballot initiative. I was wondering, from your perspective, you know, do you think, would you vote yes or no? And maybe do you even think it's worthwhile? The way you're talking, it's sort of like maybe, you know, permitting is not going to eliminate mining. It's not going to eliminate the hazards. I don't know. What do you think, Tis?
I don't know. I just followed the money. A lot of outside money doing the anti-Stand for Salmon.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of outside money coming in on both sides. But I'm voting yes.
Yeah, definitely.
I know I talked to Steve prior to his getting elected as mayor. And, you know, there's a fine line there. But I don't know. I just think that it's sort of a political football.
Yeah.
That I don't like politics to begin with.
Yeah.
But when you see, you know, the anti-Stand for Salmon, using the Stand for Salmon exact, I don't know, placards and the logo and everything else. So that's throwing another tool into the confusion, I think.
Okay.
And they're doing it knowingly. It wasn't just sort of a, oh, well, here's our logo, and it just sort of looks like theirs.
Yeah.
So, like I said, politics are ugly.
Yeah, exactly.
Very ugly, and they've gotten so much worse over the years that I tend to sort of look at who's behind what campaign.
Yeah, you're following the money.
That's yeah, right. There's been several that I've said no to because I'd say, hey, I went to your website, and it doesn't have where your funding's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out really who's funding it. So that's something I've learned over the last couple of years.
Definitely. You would be a good reporter.
I tried it. I'm not.
All right. Tis, we can wrap up our conversation. Do you have any final words you would like to say for the people of Wrangell? Maybe how they on a local level can get involved? If they're relatively new to the issue, but want to have kind of their first step into this realm, what should they be doing?
Well, we'll be having something come out, and I'll let you know when it does. Yeah. It's going to come out of this meeting. It'll probably come out next week, or by the 22nd, I think we're shooting for. And it's going to be a petition, but it's not your regular one. It's going to the Canadian government. So we'd like people to rally around that, and we will be getting information out on that for just showing people's support for it.
Definitely.
So we'll have our own campaign going here pretty soon.
For sure. And all you got to do is sign your name for that first step. So that's an easy one to do. Tis, thank you so much for coming in today.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Talk on the Rock. The time is 1:28. We'll be back next week with another guest. See ya.